My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Well, hope you're good. Hope all is well in your world. We have quite a lot of Dylan news to get to. Well, actually, I say quite a lot, but not really in terms of volume, but in terms of stuff to discuss. He has announced a brand... Well, he's back on tour for a start, but he's announced a brand new book as well. And I love the fact that 18 years after his first autobiography, Chronicles Volume 1, we get a second book, and it's not Chronicles Volume 2. Instead, it's a book called The Philosophy of Modern Song, which is going to come out on the 8th of November. And it basically looks like a collection of essays from Dylan on popular music, including the likes of Nina Simone and Elvis Costello and Hank Williams. Apparently, Bob started writing the book in 2010, and this is a quote from the press release. It says, he analyses what he calls the trap of easy rhymes. He breaks down how the addition of a single syllable can diminish a song, and even explains how bluegrass relates to heavy metal. For someone that famously didn't like people analysing his songs in this way, it seems old Bobby is analysing people's songs in that way, which is a bit of a light relief for people like me who spend quite a lot of their day analysing popular music. But honestly, this looks really exciting. I don't know if we'd maybe have wanted this over a second Chronicles. Who knows? I think a second Chronicles would have been nice, but also it's just nice to get something new from Bob that is a creative outlet that isn't what you'd expect. Even at his age, he's still surprising us and bringing out things we're surprised to see. So I'm really excited about that. The book, once again, is called The Philosophy of Modern Song by Bob Dylan. November the 8th is when it comes out, so a fair amount of time to wait, a fair amount of time to build our expectations sky high. Also, thank you for your messages on Blood on the Tracks. So if you missed this, I was asked back in, when was it, sort of October last year, I was asked to write a 10-part fictionalized account of Dylan's life to go out on a podcast. And there's a company in America called iHeartRadio, which is a big radio company, and they make podcasts as well. And there's this production company called Double Elvis, who have a load of great music podcasts out. You might have heard of the Disgraceland podcast, which is very popular. They've been doing this podcast for a while called Blood on the Tracks, and the third season is all about Bob Dylan. And I said when I put out that little kind of mini announcement about it in your podcast feed, it's similar to this podcast in that we do deal in facts of Dylan's life and stuff that he's done and stuff that he said, but it is fictionalized, so there's at some points where things are slightly sensationalized or things are moved around just a tiny bit, just to tell the story in a more easy manner, shall we say. So that fictionalized account of Dylan's life is out right now. 3 episodes are out of it. I'm really, really proud of them. I had such a fun time writing the episodes, and the actor they've got playing Bob doing the narration sounds really great, and the sound design's brilliant as well. So I'll put a link to that in this episode's description. So if you've not checked out Blood on the Tracks, then give it a go and you get a second. And thank you for your messages. I think I've got back to everyone, but thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for enjoying them as well. As I say, 3 episodes of Blood on the Tracks out right now if you fancy that. Also, of course, the Patreon episodes are going out weekly as well. Bob Dylan Album by Album Extra. Good grief, 3 separate Bob Dylan podcasts. We know you like him, Ben. Seriously. let's say hello to some subscribers on Patreon, shall we? Loads more recently, so thank you for joining up. Hi to Andrew Millam. Hi to Andrew. Another Andrew, this is from Whistling Lemons this time. Hi to Renee. Hi to Eamon McLarnon. Hi to JD. Hi to Linda Bishop. Hello to Avida Svensky. Hi to James J. and Robert Wentworth and Jay Kugler, a medical doctor. Hi to Mike Powell and The Lighthouse. Hello to Andrew Tankersley. Hi to Eileen King and Nobbs and Mario and Mark Pekansky as well. Welcome. Hope you enjoy the episodes. Thank you so much for subscribing. You can subscribe to the extra episodes in the link in this episode's description alongside that Blood on the Tracks link. Stay tuned to the end of this episode to hear a clip from Patreon, and also stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out where we go next on this podcast, to find out the next album we're looking at. And it's an out-and-out classic this time, and we're going to do another multi-part episode on it. So find out where we're going at the end of this episode. Let's get to this episode, shall we? I've waffled on enough. This is an interesting album. It's not Dylan's worst. It's not Dylan's best. I think this is probably as good as a covers album can get. I mean, I don't know about you, but I never get too excited about covers records. There's only a handful, if that, that I really love. And this is definitely up there for me. This is, as I say, as good as a covers album can be, I think. There's some nice song choices here, some really nice performances. It's not, you know, overly exciting. It's nothing that's going to completely blow your mind, but I do like it nonetheless. Let's have a look at 1992's Good As I've Been to You.
Well, it's all of a fair and a handsome girl. She's all in her tender years. She fell in love with a sailor boy. It's true she loved him well. But I go off the sea.
By the summer of 1992, Bob was at a creative low. The 1990 album Under the Red Sky had come and gone with its nursery rhymes and seemingly endless guest appearances. Bob has never really been one of those artists to go quiet for years. I mean, for a start, he's always touring. But even when he's suffering from a creative block, he still manages to release albums. Whether this is a catalyst designed to get himself back in the groove, or that's all he knows as an artist, or perhaps his Columbia recording contract dictates that he has to. Regardless, he always does. And so in the 90s, we had two albums of covers. They were covers albums of old blues songs, songs that Bob had loved and still loves, songs that he had grown up with, songs from that old weird America, story songs, murder ballads, blues traditionals. He records them in his garage in California. We can assume this was a task that Dylan enjoyed, and Columbia didn't really mind because, well, they had a new Dylan album to put out. And rightfully, both these records have had their fans and their champions. David Bowie, for example, stated in a 1997 interview that Dylan's albums have a great class to them, even the albums where he's just playing songs of old long-dead blues singers. Both these records have a quality about them that you don't find on too many records. They have an intimacy too, a live, spontaneous feel. But of course, they never knock us off of our feet. They never rise to the top. And how can they? There's only so much you can do with an album like this. What we do get, though, is a couple of competent LPs. They tread ground that has been present in Dylan's work since the very beginning. And it starts here, somewhat unsurprisingly, with a murder ballad. Frankie and Johnny, originally titled Frankie and Albert, was inspired by a real-life crime of passion committed by Frankie Baker in 1899. The song itself was composed by balladeer Bill Dooley shortly after the Baker murder case. He titled it Frankie Killed Alan. Let me set the scene for you. It's 2 a.m. on October the 15th, 1899. We're at an apartment building located on 212 Targi Street in St. Louis, Missouri. Frankie Baker, a 22-year-old woman, raises a gun from her side. She takes aim and fires it into the abdomen of her 17-year-old lover, Alan, also known as Albert Britt. Britt had just returned home from a cakewalk at a local dance hall where he and another woman, Nellie Bly, had won a prize in a slow dancing contest. After the shot is fired, Britt falls to the floor, gasping for air, and Baker starts to cry. He's still alive, but he would die 4 days later of his wounds at City Hospital. On trial, Baker claimed that Britt had attacked her with a knife and that she was acting in self-defense. She was acquitted and died in Portland, Oregon, in a mental institution in 1952. In the opening lines of a song, we have Frankie introduced. Dylan sings, Frankie was a good girl, everyone knows, paid $100 for Albert's new suite of clothes. He was her man, but he done her wrong. The line, he was her man, but he done her wrong, becomes a hook of sorts in the song. It's a kind of a nice little twist on the woman done me wrong trope, which is at the heart of many blues songs. The song follows a pretty linear storyline, and in the final verse there's a nice third act, concluded with the lines, "Frankie went to the scaffold, calm as a girl could be, turned her eyes up towards the heavens, said, nearer my God to thee. He was her man, but he done her wrong." "Nearer my God to thee" is something that stands out for me. The actual song mentioned there, "Nearer my God to thee," is a funeral song, appropriate for what's happening to the character of Frankie. But this is also a good reminder that these songs on this record are not only some of Dylan's favourite as a listener, but stuff that has inspired him as an artist. In his brilliant 1980s outtake Caribbean Wind, Dylan too mentions "Nearer my God to thee." This happens in the fourth verse as he sings, "The cry of the peacock flies buzz in my head. Ceiling fan broken, there's a heat in my bed. Street band playing "Nearer my God to thee." We met at the station where the mission bells ring. This happens elsewhere too. Take the song two tracks after Frankie and Albert's on this record, a tune called "Black Jack Davy." Twice Dylan sings of Spanish leather in this song, reminding us of his 1964 classic. This starts in the fourth verse of "Black Jack Davy" with, pull off them high-heeled shoes, all made of Spanish leather. Get behind me on my horse and we'll ride off together. It becomes apparent that little moments from these old songs appear in Dylan's work time and time again. Of course, these could very easily be coincidences. There's only so many things you can sing about after all. But for me, it feels like a nice glimpse into Dylan's process, or even the creative process, full stop. How a word or a reference can form something new or different, or even be mirrored in another piece of art when the author is a huge admirer of the original work. Sandwiched between those two songs I've mentioned on Good As I've Been to You is another tune called "Jim Jones." It's a sad song. It's a song about looking for freedom, which again perhaps feels like it is linked with Caribbean Wind. In fact, on an extra episode of this podcast, we looked at how that song might be a tune about looking for escape, a song about dealing with change or searching for that change at least. "Jim Jones" itself is a traditional Australian folk ballad. It dates back to the 19th century. The narrator Jim Jones is found guilty for poaching of animals to be precise. He is sentenced to transportation to the penal colony of New South Wales, a common sentence at the time. En route, his ship is attacked by pirates, but the crew manages to hold them off. The narrator claims he would rather have joined the pirates or drowned at sea than gone to his destination of Botany Bay. Later, Jones is cautioned with a promise of the whip, and in the final verse he describes the daily drudgery of life as a convict in Australia. He dreams of escaping and taking revenge on his captors. Dylan gives us a nice little vocal in the song, and on the line, "The crows will pick your bones," he gives us some trademark Bobby D singing to go with it.
"Or else your Sally Haynes," says he, "and after that Jim Jones is high up upon the gallows tree. The crows will pick your bones."
The album's fifth track is a song that seems to be at the centre of Dylan's reference book. It's called "Sitting on Top of the World," and it's a country blues song written by Walter Vinson and Lonnie Chapman. They are the core members of the Mississippi Shakes, who first recorded the song in 1930. It would go on to become a popular crossover hit and was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2008. Pretty enduring, by all accounts. The Mississippi Shakes are a favourite of Dylan's. He's covered them a few times and he's used their melodies a few times too. They also helped to make the song "Carina Carina" popular, a tune that Dylan would of course include on his 1963 classic album The Freewheeling. He'd go on to cover their song "Blood in My Eyes" on Good As I've Been to You's sister album World Gone Wrong a year later. And here is what separates these records for me. I don't know why, but I always just prefer World Gone Wrong to this album. And it's evident to me when we compare these two covers. They are both in the same ballpark. They are both ballads. They both come from similar origins. And they both feature a great delivery from Dylan. But "Blood in My Eyes" hits me in the heart, whereas "Sitting on Top of the World" just glances it.
"'Cause in the summer,
course, this is a personal preference, but there might be some logic behind it. Perhaps second time round, Dylan in his garage felt even more at home, excuse the pun, and obviously not meant in the literal sense, to produce a better performance. Or, as I suspect, the song choices on World Gone Wrong are just songs that I seem to prefer, for whatever reason. It's a kind of non-starter, really, though, comparing these albums. It really is like comparing apples with apples. There's only minor differences between these two LPs. At their hearts, they are both really enjoyable for obvious reasons. Where else will we hear Dylan like this, solo with an acoustic guitar, just rattling through some songs that are clearly brilliant compositions, whether that be the lyrics or the nice traditional chords and riffs that pop out of many of them? We hear this overtly on the song Hard Times. It's a cover of the song Hard Times Come Again No More. The tune was written by the father of American music, Stephen C. Foster, in 1854. The first audio recording of this song was a wax cylinder by the Edison Company. That comes from 1905, and it would end up being a hugely enduring song, just like others here, with Mary J. Blige, Willie Nelson, and Bruce Springsteen being just a small number of artists who have covered it. It's a track about those less fortunate than us, those going through hard times, and this offers some solace to them. And with difficult-to-process world events going on as I record this podcast, it's a track that could not be more current.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all the song that will linger forever in our ears. Our hard times come again no more.
Stephen Foster wrote nearly 300 songs in his life. But this tune seems to be tragically prophetic for him, as it was reported that he sang this song quite often in his last days. The composer died on January 13, 1864, at the age of just 37, with only 38 cents to his name. I've seen this fact verified by a couple of sources, and I always marvel at the accuracy of that money. Someone must have counted every single cent just after Foster's death. Quite strange. Still, we digress. The song is a great one, and Dylan gives it the performance it deserves, which isn't too surprising considering that the words sound like words he could have written himself. He sings lines like, "'Tis a sigh that is wafted across the troubled wave. "'Tis a wail that is heard upon the shore. "'Tis a dirge that is murmured around the lonely grave. "'Oh, hard times, come again no more.'" I also really like the chords in this song. With this, Dylan plays a dominant C chord slightly differently. He kind of plays it more as a C sus 4. This chord is played along with the F chords and the G chords in the main sequence, which sounds something like this. But on the line that starts with "'Tis the song," we hear those sharper sounding bluesy chords of C3 going to a B, which goes like this. All resulting in a nice little section of the song here.
There's a song, the sigh of the wind.
The sonics of the record lay down the foundations for the following World Gone Wrong album. It's just Dylan and an electric acoustic guitar. They don't choose to mic up Dylan's acoustic for the most part, instead they plug it in and that's where it becomes the acoustic electric. That's why it sounds more like this. Than this. It's not my favourite sound in the world, to be honest, when it comes to the acoustic guitar. It's the only time the album shows its age a little bit for me. These days, if they did this, I'm sure they'd record a more acoustic-y sound. They'd mic up the acoustic guitar instead, maybe give it a little reverb, rather than give it this electric acoustic sound. But this record is now quite some years old, and we can't nitpick too much about the sonics, but I often wonder what a modern record with these songs would sound like from Dylan. The whole point of Good As I've Been to You, though, really isn't the Sonics. It's the songs and the performance. And Bob gives us a slick performance on the album closer, Froggy Went A-Courting, a 6.5 minute song about a frog courting a mouse. Yes, yes, that's right. Finally.
Frog went a-courting and he did right. Frog went a-courting and he did right, uh-huh. Frog went a-courting and he did right with a sword and a pistol by his side, uh-huh.
Incredibly, the song dates back to 1549 under the title Frog Come to the Muldur. This is Scots language, a West Germanic language spoken in, you guessed it, Scotland. English, or at least British ballads, have played a huge role in Dylan's development as a songwriter. In fact, you could say a trip to London in 1962 changed his life forever. During that trip, Dylan was exposed to London's folk scene and the clubs that played host to those tunes and artists. Martin Carthy, a British folk singer and godfather to the British folk scene, is quoted on Dylan's time in London. He says, "England was actually crucial to his development. If you listen to the Freewheeling, most of which was made before he came to England, and you listen to the next album after that, there's an enormous difference in the way he's singing. It's the sort of tunes he's singing, the way he's putting the words together. Bob Dylan's a piece of blotting paper when it comes to listening to tunes, and that had an enormous effect on him." All these years later, we're hearing Dylan return to these songs. And sure, they're not all British folk tunes. In fact, a lot aren't. But the same rules apply to all of them. Dylan is going to these songs, paying homage to them. But he's not changing them particularly. He's almost re-airing them. He's approaching them from a different angle. A young Dylan would have sung these songs understanding, but this Dylan has lived and can approach these compositions from perhaps a different side. Like Joni Mitchell once sang, he's looked at life from both sides now, and that's reflected in these songs and these recordings. Dylan is still looking into the UK's roots on another song, Arthur McBride. This song comes from 1840. The song expressed the sentiment that not all the young Irish were willing to fight in the war for the British crown, again reminding us of a young Dylan and the themes that he dealt with a lot early on in his career.
Me and my cousin, one Arthur McBride, as we went walking down by the seaside, now Mockford followed, and what did we tie? Are it being on Christmas morning?
Away from this, the relatively young, in comparison to that song, Step It Up and Go, is the album's eighth track. It's a bluesy number from 1939. Dylan ups the pace with this song and takes us through some nice guitar playing with his classic delivery. It's a good livener halfway through the album, considering we don't often get too much of it these days. It's nice to hear Dylan rattle around on the guitar just after the minute and a half mark.
Yeah, go.
Coming in the same composition year as this song is the album's following track, Tomorrow Night. The pace slows for this song, as Dylan throws in a nice harmonica solo at the start. Again, I like the chord sequence in this song. It, in the smallest way, shares some DNA with Dylan's tune Simple Twist of Fate. In that song, albeit with different guitar tuning, Dylan shifts to an A minor chord when he sings lines like, "'Twas then he felt alone." This really helps to heighten the emotion in those lines throughout the song. The chord is a little sharper than others in the tune. That happens on this song too. When Dylan sings Tomorrow Night on the line, "Will you remember what you said tomorrow night?" we shift to an A minor.
Tomorrow night, will you remember what you said tonight? Tomorrow night, will all the thrill be gone?
Another reminder that these songs are interwoven with Bob's originals. The album's producer is listed as Debbie Gold. Gold had a variety of music business jobs in her career. She was an artist manager, she acted as tour support, music supervision, and here she is listed as producer. Although now no longer sadly with us, she was famous amongst friends for her great rock and roll stories. She once spoke about Dylan and the man he is. She said she'd been around the world with both Bob and Bruce Springsteen, and the difference between them was that when people met Springsteen, they would shake his hand and excitedly shout, "I've just met the boss, I've just met the boss." With Dylan, though, she says when people met him, they would just stand there with their mouth open. She says it's like they just met God and they couldn't believe it. She also tells many brilliant stories about being on tour with Dylan. Apparently one time Dylan was in London and he left his hotel room one morning not to be seen again for hours. His team panicked. They were worried about where their star could possibly be, especially since he was due to play to 20,000 people that evening. Bob appears hours later after a lot of worry from his team, and when they ask him where he could have possibly gone, Gold talks about how he said he just walked around London with his hood up, and for the first time in years, no one recognised him at all. He was apparently overjoyed about it. She goes on to say that he then apparently said, "It was such a beautiful day, so I went through Hyde Park and I was walking around for hours. It was so peaceful. I saw so many people and no one said a word to me. Finally, I was making my way back to Regent's Park and I ended up in Regent's Park Zoo, just sitting there quietly on the hill. It was so great, I could hardly believe it. And I didn't want the day to end. Finally, I noticed it must have been 5 p.m. or something like that, because the zookeeper was getting ready to close and he politely asked everyone to leave. Eventually, the whole place was empty except for me, and I didn't notice as I was busy pondering what a peaceful day it had been. The zookeeper came over to me and he said, 'It's closing time. I'm afraid you're going to have to leave, Mr. Dylan, even you.'" Gold, as the producer here, seems to be less of a musical credit and more of a friendship credit, or a nod to that friend. Good As I've Been to You not only sort of has a producer, but it sort of has a title track. On the song You're Gonna Quit Me, Dylan sings, "You're gonna quit me, baby. Good as I've been to you, Lord, Lord. Good as I've been to you, Lord, Lord." It's the perfect representation of the album, really. It's a simple song in a simple setting. Interestingly, despite the DIY nature of the album, there were some outtakes for this record. You Belong to Me is a nice song, which ended up not on the LP, but on the soundtrack for the Oliver Stone film Natural Born Killers. It was originally written by Pee-wee King, Chilton Price, and Red Stewart, and for me is one of the best songs from these garage sessions. Just remember till you're home again, you belong. This LP as a whole is a nice little day trip in Dylan's back catalogue. It forms the first part of a fun double bill from Bob in a time where nothing was particularly going on in terms of creativity. These albums, whilst acting as a nice little placeholder for an album of originals, are so much more than just a covers record. They are a glimpse into Dylan the musicologist, the fan, if you like. The intimate setting of his garage brings to mind Johnny Cash's American recordings, in that all we really need for a record to work is to spend time in the company of a legend. There's not too many bells and whistles here, just like the Johnny Cash recordings. Although I will say Rick Rubin is a powerhouse for those records, and I would have loved to have seen him produce an album like this for Bob. Still, that doesn't detract from what Good As I've Been to You is. It's a trip down memory lane, a glimpse into Dylan's origin story. And despite the tales of murder, heartache, and hard times, this is actually a really enjoyable album. See the jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again. You belong. that is it for this episode. Share your thoughts on Good As I've Been to You. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Bob Dylan Podcast. If you have been enjoying this season, then please give us a review. For independent podcasts like this, reviews really do help. So share your thoughts, please, especially if you're listening on the Apple Podcast app. Please feel free to give a review. 4 or 5 stars. We'll cut it. Thank you very much. On the Patreon show, we did an episode a while back now, actually. We've been doing these episodes looking at particular songs line by line. So literally going through every single lyric line by line and trying to piece together some sort of meaning from that. I think my favourite one so far was going through Blind Willie McTell line by line. An amazing song. A song that has so much in it from, well, so many different themes in it. Maybe I won't go into too much detail right now because the episode is obviously full of that. But, you know, from slavery to American land to blues singers, obviously. It's a song that covers so much. And it was a really fun episode to write and fascinating to look at that song in detail. This is a little clip from it. This is Blind Willie McTell, line by line. The mistreatment of the black community is front and centre on the third verse, as he sings, "See them big plantations burning, hear the cracking of the whips. Smell that sweet magnolia blooming, see the ghosts of slavery ships." Those opening lines place us fully in the slave trade, and the following line mentioning magnolia might be a reference to the classic Billie Holiday song Strange Fruit. It was originally written in 1937. Strange Fruit is a dark song about the lynching of black Americans during the Jim Crow era. The fruit in question is, of course, the rotting bodies hanging from the trees. It's a classic, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but the line about magnolia is as follows. "Scent of magnolia sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh." That episode in full on Patreon right now. There is a link in this episode's description. Right, next week then, a big album to look at. We're going to begin a multi-part episode look at The Freewheeling. That's right, we are going to finish off season 7 with a look at that important record for Dylan, not only because it contained some amazing compositions, but because it really started his journey to become one of the greatest singer-songwriters, one of the greatest musical artists of all time. So next week, we start our look at The Freewheeling. And as I say, it's a multi-part episode. So, you know, once again, like we did with Blood on the Tracks and Hard Rain, we're going to look at the album over a number of episodes and go into the recording process and its wider context and where it fits within Dylan's back catalogue. I can't wait to get started with looking at that because it's an amazing album, as we all know, and that will begin next week. In the meantime, take care of yourself and I'll see you down the road. Thanks for listening.